Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. Lynn, just so you're prepared, Lynn, be still. at 5:55, I'm going to release the mic, and I need you or someone else to take the mic for 5 minutes, maybe playing a song or something like that, while I go get Bentino and bring him back. And then I hope at, now I'm saying 5:55, that's looking at my clock, it's 7:55 Eastern time. So in, 54 minutes from now, I'll release the mic and then go get Bentino and then come back at the top of the hour, which will be 8 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah, Lynn says she can't. So if someone else would work with her and volunteer to take the mic for that 5 minutes, that would be great. Lynn or Alex, she says, yeah. So I'll need about a 5 minute break just to go fetch him. Alex will. Okay, perfect. So we're covered then. So right now we are here for 7 Steps to Awakening. And tonight we're going to begin with quote 576, which is a part of step 3 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And let me just get that link and give that to you. There's the link in the room for those of you who are here. If you're listening on the radio and you want the link, what you can do is just go to RDA7. That's the digit 7. It's not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, that's RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, if you look on the menu bar, you'll see step 1, step 2, step 3. Click on step 3 and then choose the numbering sequence that's going to allow you to find your way to 576, because that's where we're going to begin. And I will be reading quotes from the 7 Steps to Awakening. Right now, these quotes are coming from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and possibly sharing a little spontaneously. But then after sharing from the quote in the 7 Steps to Awakening, we will go to my journal and we will look at what I wrote there when I was contemplating these same quotes about 2 years ago. It looks like we're looking at August 27th, 2012, so just a little over 2 years ago. What I would like to do first before we begin is I would like to just take a moment for a little contemplation, a little quiet time. And I think what I'll do is just play a short song while we do that. So here's a Donovan song. We were talking about Brother Sun, Sister Moon this morning. So here's a nice Donovan song. It's called Island of Circles. So let's just be still, listen to this, and then we'll begin.
Birds are singing, sweet and low, from the trees that gently grow. By the silver rivers flow, on this lovely day. To the meadow there go I, to wander as the butterfly. How the flowers please my eye on this lovely day. I wish it could be always. Life is easy on such a day. I wish this peace on everyone on this lovely day. Thank you. I wish it could be always. Life is easy on such a day. I wish this peace on everyone on this lovely day.
Thank you very much, Donovan. All right, so I will begin sharing now from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, the quotes are coming from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and this is quote 576. The realized man is egoless. He has lost the capacity of identifying himself with anything. He is without location, placeless, beyond space and time, beyond the world, beyond words and thoughts is he. People use the word ego in a lot of different ways. But for me, the ego, for quite some time now, that word ego has meant simply identifying with the false self. So identifying with this mind as who I am, identifying with this body as what I am, that is ego. And to be egoless would be to have no such identification. Notice Nisargadatta says that the realized man is without location. You know, when I think I am this body is my location. The body may appear to move around in the world, and you know, one day I'm in Santa Barbara and one day I'm in Pueblo, but what is the I? It's really the body. That's my location. But the realized man has no such location because the realized man has no such identification. He is without location, placeless, beyond space and time. It's interesting. We talk a lot about, you know, there's no such thing as time. There's only the eternal now. And although we may even have the sense of that, an honest sense of that, at the same time, many of us still really strongly believe in time. And time is really nothing but, well, it's really memories that I identify with because they add to my sense of self, or projected imagination that I identify with because it adds to my sense of self. That's what time is. So if I tell you some story about how I went to China and I adopted Jasmine and I had this experience on that trip and that experience on that trip, and especially if I say, and so and so said this to me, and I, you know, I don't understand why that person said that, you know, and I talk about that, you know, this is something that happened 16 years ago, but I talk about that in a present moment type of way. You know, but I never said such a thing. I'm not sure why she thinks I said such a thing. You know, that's really more than just a mere memory or a mere story that is coming up for some reason to be shared right now. There's an identification there. It adds to my sense of self. I'm holding on to that story. It still has power. Or if I make up some story about the future, of course not aware that I'm making it up, and I tell you that story with that same sense of identification. This is what time is. Really the ego, which is nothing at all, but really the ego is only one thing. And it's that identification with this sense of self. And the sense of self is completely made up. The sense of self is just my ideas of who I am. One thing that's kind of fun about raising a teenager is that as I raise a teenager, I watch her put together her ego sense of self. You know, based on experience, based on who she's associated with at school, based on what, you know, their definition of cool and uncool is, or whatever word they use nowadays. You know, she builds this ego sense of self, and she says, I am this, and I am that, and I like this, and I don't like that. And, you know, as someone who's known her since she was a baby, I actually know it's not true. I'm watching it be made up. I'm watching it be invented. And I realize this is what we've all done. We've all made up ideas about who we are, either based on our experience, based on what other people have shared with us, based on what we imagined we wanted to be. And then we say, this is who I am, and that's the ego. To be egoless, of course, is to have none of that, no sense of that, no attachment to ideas about who I am, no attachment to experiences as adding to my identity or being a part of my identity or a part of who I am. No attachment to this body. No attachment to the things around me. No attachment to anything as who I am. It's really free floating. If you look very, very deeply at the idea even of letting go of everything that you currently use to identify yourself, if you look deeply at that and you see I'm letting go of identifying myself with my roles, I'm letting go of identifying myself with my clothing, I'm letting go of identifying myself with my talents, with my skills, with my past, with my values, with my mistakes. At some point you realize there's nothing but this free-floating sense of being. Nisargadatta says, the realized man is egoless. He has lost the capacity. Imagine that, losing the capacity to identify yourself with anything. I don't know about you, but I definitely still have that capacity. And if I don't want to identify with a thought, with a feeling, with a value, with a memory, with a dream, with a role, with anything, I have to continually remind myself I still have that capacity. But Nisargadatta is saying the realized man, or of course the realized woman, has lost the capacity of identifying himself with anything. He is without location, placeless, beyond space and time, beyond the world, beyond words and thoughts, is he. Again, just that free-floating beingness, just isness. Lots of happening may be going on, but none of that happening is attached to as me, or as defining me, or even as affecting me. I'm going to go to the journal. And what I wrote on August 27th, 2012 was this. Identification does not exist in capital S, self. Identification does not exist in self. It does not exist to any degree. Wherever there is identification, there is ego. Now, what is meant by identification in this particular thought is identifying with something, being defined by something. You know, I think we all know that there are definitely people who like to think of themselves or like to be defined as awake or enlightened. But not even that, not even being identified with that idea. A true realized person would not even be identified with that idea. Nisargadatta said, beyond words and thoughts is he. Well, enlightenment truly is just a thought. So if I say I am enlightened, if I say that within myself, if I take that on as my identification, I'm not really being beyond thoughts, am I? But you know, the flip side of that is also true. How many of us identify ourselves as unenlightened? That's also a thought, you know. And if we hold on to that thought, if we hold on to the idea, I'm not enlightened, well, then we are actually still holding on to identifying with an idea. That's who I am. I am unenlightened. Or I am not yet enlightened. What this particular quote is really guiding us to do when it's contemplated deeply is to notice all of the places where we identify with something and to start looking with clarity at that identification so that it is let go, right? So that it is no longer a part of our identification. So it doesn't mean, for example, then, that I want to, if I look at the mind and I notice that I have this thought I'm unenlightened, it doesn't mean, oh, I need to throw that away. I'm enlightened. It doesn't mean that. It means throw away the whole coin. You don't go from I'm unenlightened to I'm enlightened. You just let go of identifying with an idea. Do you see? And if we still have that capacity to identify, this can seem somewhat difficult at first because the mind is not happy with this free-floating beingness isness. The mind wants to be identified as something, so it's gonna look. You know, it's gonna look for something to stick with. You know, so maybe I'm not identifying with the idea that I'm unenlightened. I'm not identifying with the idea I'm enlightened. Thank God the mind says, I'm the one who's beyond both ideas. There we go. It found something else to stick with. It found another place to identify. You see, the mind is going to be looking for a place to land, a place to identify. And so this is what we want to watch for. We just want to learn to be that free, floating isness, not tied down to any identification. That doesn't mean we don't perform our roles. We just don't see our roles as who we are. That doesn't mean we don't answer to a name. We just don't see that name as who we are. That doesn't mean we don't care for the body. We just don't see that body as what we are. And I think this is where it gets difficult for some people, because some people seem to think, if I'm not those things, then I can't have anything to do with that action. You know, I can't act like a mother. I can't care for the body. I can't go to a job. But it's actually not saying that. It's just saying don't identify with anything. Don't identify with anything. Just be. Be in the role. Be in the company with others. Be sometimes in the teacher role. Be sometimes in the student role. Be sometimes in the pedestrian role. Be sometimes in the driver role. Be sometimes in the pet lover role. Be sometimes in the, you know, just keep listing roles, but don't identify with any of it. Just be. So again, in the journal at 576, it says, identification does not exist in capital S self. It does not exist to any degree. Wherever there is identification, there is ego. And as I mentioned to you, for me, the definition of ego is being identified with a false self or a false idea about what I am. So therefore, it makes perfect sense that wherever there is identification, there is ego. Identification does not exist in the capital S self, the true self. It does not exist to any degree. Wherever there is identification, there is ego. And now I'm going to scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 577. And before I read from the journal at 577, I will read the Nisargadatta quote. The false self must be abandoned before the real self can be found. The false self must be abandoned before the real self can be found. So, you know, I can't really think of myself as unenlightened, as enlightened, or I can't even think of myself as the one who's beyond all concepts and know who I am. Because any identification that I have with an idea, it's like, you know, it's like being tied down to an idea. And if I'm tied down to an idea, I can't know myself as free-floating. I know myself as tied down. And they like very much what I'm tied down to. I may get a lot of self-satisfaction out of the idea I'm tied down to, or I may suffer from the idea I'm tied down to, but there's still a tied down. There's still a tetheredness to it. Whether I'm suffering or whether I get a lot of self-satisfaction, there's a tetheredness. I am this one. Right? And I can't be tethered and know myself as free-floating at the same time. I just can't. So the false self must be abandoned before the real self can be found. The tether has to be cut before we know ourselves as free-floating, right? It makes perfect sense. I think Jamie wants to go outside. Let me let her out, and then I will come back and read from the journal. Did you want outside, my love? All right, let me read from the journal on 577. It says, I cannot cling to my thoughts, my stories, my opinions, and my perceptions, and know true self. And then there's a question, italics. What are my perceptions? Where do I think I am right? This is a type of self-inquiry. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, I'm gonna let go of my thoughts, my stories, my opinions, my perceptions. But the truth is, if we don't actually look at our thoughts, stories, opinions, and perceptions, we don't notice them. They exist because we haven't looked at them. I think this is what the Course means when it says something like the ego thrives in darkness. You see, the light is our awareness. Simple as that. The light is our awareness. And so our non-awareness is the darkness. And so if I don't notice, I'll tell you something I noticed recently. It was kind of funny. In fact, I was talking about it at dinner tonight. I said, I'm sexist. I noticed that I'm sexist, not in the sense of the word where I think that, you know, like a woman shouldn't be a doctor or anything like that. Not that in that sense, but, well, a couple of weeks ago, some of you may remember this from Facebook, we were, under lockdown in our neighborhood. And the sheriff's department called and said that there was an armed and dangerous person in the neighborhood, and we were asked not to go outside, not to send our children to school, to stay inside. You know, I immediately imagined a man. Immediately. Turned out it was a woman. And so that brought my attention to a perception. And now I kind of joke about it. I'm sexist, you know, I'm joking about it. But what's really happening now that my attention is on that perception is I'm starting to notice how I will hear, and it doesn't really even have to be this type of story. It's not even, it's beyond sexism, actually. I will hear a little bit of something and I will imagine more based on my prior experience or based on my own ideas or my own perceptions. And I'll think I'm right about what I imagined. And, you know, I wouldn't have noticed this if the person that night had happened to have been a man. I would never have even noticed. But because it turned out to be a woman, I was like, ah, looky there. Look how I imagined and believed. They didn't say on the phone, armed and dangerous man. They said, armed and dangerous person. I'm the one who took that and turned it into something else. And so now that I'm aware of that, I can start paying attention to when I'm adding on to things. Right? Like I said, it's beyond the idea of, you know, quote, being sexist. I can notice when I'm adding on to things. When does somebody say something or I hear something, and then immediately my imagination adds a little more, and I don't even notice. I can begin to pay attention to it. So this question that says, what are my perceptions? Where do I think I am right? Is guiding us to look. Because we don't even notice what our thoughts are, what our stories are, what our opinions are, what our perceptions are. How can we let go of them if we don't even notice them? So the first thing that needs to happen is a noticing. So again, the journal says, I cannot cling to my thoughts, my stories, my opinions, and my perceptions, and know true self. But then it asks, what are my perceptions? Where do I think I am right? It encourages a looking. to looking as critical. And now I'm just going to scroll down to the bottom of the page. I'm going to click on 578. And I'm going to jump up and let Jamie back in. Be right back. Sometimes I wonder what Jamie's perception is of me sitting here looking at the computer and making all this noise. And you and I perceive, of course, that I'm, you know, talking to you. But what is her perception of what's going on here? I sit down at this desk, I look at this machine, and then I just make noise for an hour or two straight. All right, so 578. I will begin by reading from Nisargadatta. Resolutely remind yourself that you are not the mind and that its problems are not yours. I love this. Resolutely. What a strong word. Resolutely, you know. When I hear the word resolutely, it means consistently and with conviction. And then because we're talking about spiritual practice, I have to add, and with heart. Consistently with conviction and heart. Resolutely remind yourself that you are not the mind and its problems are not yours. You know, we saw last week, and I think a previous week too, since I accidentally did the same quotes a couple weeks in a row, we saw that the belief that I am a person is actually just a habit. That's what Nisargadatta calls it. He says it's just a habit. Like it was just a habit for me when I heard the word armed and dangerous to think man. It's just a habit. Many of you probably have the exact same habit. When you hear armed and dangerous, you probably think man too. We have a lot of these habits. The habits that define who I am and what the world is. So how do you break a habit? Well, gently, I think, is necessary. And by that I mean I can't judge myself. You know, I told you all that I was joking. I'm sexist. That's not actually an identification. Trust me, I'm not identifying with myself as sexist. Nor was that a judgment against myself. It's a joking way that I'm bringing attention to the made-upness that happened and letting it go. It's gentle. Joking, it's gentle. But it's also resolute. You know, I'm looking at where I'm still tethered. And I'm reminding myself, those are tethers. And then I'm resting so that the tethers can be untied. Another thing that I do a lot now, not 100% of the time, I do forget. But I look at the world and the mind and anything the body's feeling, whether it's an emotion or a sensation like hunger or a hot flash, any sensation at all. I look at the world, the mind, and the body sensations as if I'm looking through a window at them. I, whatever I am, is on this side of the window, and all of those things are outside the window. The thinking mind is outside the window. The sensations of the body are outside the window. And I look out the window at them. And this is a part of resolutely reminding myself that I am not the mind and that its problems are not mine. You know, if I am on the inside of the window and the mind is on the outside of the window, and I'm sitting inside looking out and watching, then that's not what I am. I'm not that which is out there. There are probably dozens of practices that we can use, whatever is either most comfortable to us or most effective in the current moment, to resolutely remind ourselves that we are not the mind and that its problems are not ours. We might even shift back and forth between one practice and another practice. That's okay. What matters is that we are resolutely, consistently, with conviction and with heart, reminding ourselves that we are not the mind and its problems are not ours. In fact, this morning, it seems like I talked a lot about how the mind actually uses problems in order to get our attention and to seemingly keep itself alive, which really means to keep our identification tight there, keep ourselves very tethered. But when the mind starts talking, if we in one way or another remind ourselves, I am not that mind and its problems are not mine, and we observe the talking, watch the talking, rest through the talking, gently shift our attention from the talking to the heart. What this practice is doing is helping to break that identification with the mind. And that's the same as letting go of ego, because ego is identification with the false self. And I love how Nisargadatta asks us to resolutely remind ourselves. Be consistent, be vigilant, is what the Course says. Vigorous is what NTI says. We really want to be so consistent that we don't slip into identification for very long. It doesn't mean the mind won't think. It just means we're not identifying with the mind. Begin to see the mind as like a machine or something that's making noise. But it's not who you are. And of course, it's not that hard to see that you're not the mind. Because you can watch the mind. And if you can watch the mind, what are you? Where are you watching from? I mean, last week, Timothy, I think, was using the example of a fingertip. He said a fingertip doesn't have to touch itself to be a fingertip. And he said, a fingertip by itself, you know, if there was nothing else around, it can't even touch itself. And so if it had to, you know, if the fingertip was saying, well, before I believe I'm a fingertip, I need to touch myself, it would never believe it was a fingertip because it can't touch itself. But we can't see ourselves like we can see the mind. But we are able to see the mind. You can see your thoughts. You can even have thoughts about your thoughts, and you can see those. And so with just a little bit of practice, with just a little bit of watchfulness, with just a little bit of resolute reminding yourself, it becomes very clear that you're not the mind. In fact, that's an impossibility. becomes very clear because somehow you're the one that's able to see the mind. You aren't the mind. And so Nisargadatta is saying what is most helpful is to continually, vigorously, with vigilance, with conviction, consistently, with heart, resolutely, remind yourself, over and over again throughout the day, with heart. Remind yourself that you are not the mind and that its problems are not yours. Just keep doing that. And this will help to break that identification with mind. And we're all capable of that. Some people say to me, you know, I've never had a mystical experience. Or some people say to me, you know, I don't hear the Holy Spirit or, you know, whatever else. But we're all capable of reminding ourselves we're not the mind. We don't have to have a mystical experience or we don't have to be able to hear something that we call the Holy Spirit in order to do this. No special skills at all are required. No special understanding at all is required. I don't have to understand metaphysics. I don't have to understand science, quantum physics. I don't have to understand anything. I don't need to be able to quote anyone. I don't even need to know the names of the world's great mystical teachers. Compared to everybody else on the spiritual path, I could be the one unskilled, bumbling idiot. But if I resolutely remind myself that I'm not the mind and that its problems are not mine, that break in identification is going to happen. That idea of who I am will be let go. The only thing really required is the desire to do it. An honest, sincere desire to let go of those identifications. To cut each and every tether. Let's see, Barb has typed the daily quote from September 16th. Let me read what she has written. Observing is merely this. Watching while realizing you do not know. Observing sets the moment free. It does not make of it a slave. It does not make it that which you would have it be. When the moment is free, it is a gift. As freedom, it is the reflection of your truth. As this gift, it is free to give a gift. It is free to give the gift. It is free to give the freedom you have given back to the one who gave it. There we go. That's the daily quote. It was one from the Thoughts of Awakening. Yeah, of course I recognized it. Yeah. All right, I have 10 more minutes. My little clock is reminding me before I need to go get Bentino. So let me read this one more time and then we'll go see what was written in the journal. So number 578, resolutely remind yourself that you are not the mind and that its problems are not yours. Again, we can all do that. How dang cool is that? So here's what I wrote in the journal after contemplating this quote. With gentle firmness, respond to the mind's habit of thinking by remembering, I am not interested in maintaining a false self. And of course, this is mine. This is what I wrote after contemplation, which maybe is why I love this so much. What is it that's going to drive me to resolutely remind myself that I'm not the mind and that its problems are not mine? a lack of interest in maintaining the false self. At least that's my answer. I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to maintain this idea that I am this person, that these are my values, and this is my opinion, and this is what's right, and this is what's wrong, and this is who I like, and who I don't like, and what I like, and what I don't like. And, you know, all of that has become a burden. It's a heavy, heavy burden that I can see clearly now I do not need. I'm not interested in maintaining that anymore. And because I'm not interested in maintaining that anymore, I am going to resolutely remind myself that I'm not the mind and its problems aren't mine. And the way I'm going to do that is with gentleness, because gentleness is absolutely required. But gentleness does not negate the possibility of firmness. In fact, firmness also seems necessary here. So with gentle firmness, when the mind starts yakking away, I am going to respond by remembering I'm not interested in maintaining a false self. And because that is so true for me, when I remember that thought, I will simultaneously lose interest in whatever story the mind is telling. I just have to remember what I truly want. If I don't remember what I truly want, I might think I want to listen to the mind story, because it's probably telling a pretty good story. It's probably telling me, you know, how I can make enough money to survive. It's probably telling me how I can get my boyfriend to stop doing such and such, which I don't like, and start doing this and that, which I would like better. You know, it's probably telling me how I can, you know, make my house a little nicer than it is, a little more comfortable. It's probably got lots of interesting stuff to say, stuff that's interesting to me, stuff that will continue that habit of giving it my attention. And so if I don't want to do that, I have to remind myself of what I want even more, more than anything the mind has to say. And so for me, it is helpful to remember I'm not interested in maintaining a false self. I'm not interested in being tethered. I'm not interested in believing I am what I am not. I no longer want to do this. And when I remember that, then I lose interest in whatever the mind is saying. I remember the heart. And I let go of the mind. It's easy. So with gentle firmness, and I can add also with consistency. With gentle firmness and consistency, respond to the mind's habit of thinking by remembering, I am not interested in maintaining a false self. That means I am not interested in getting all caught up in this story. And now I'm going to click on 579. I'll read 579 from Srinivasagadatta Maharaj. He said, "That immovable state which is not affected by the birth and death of a body or a mind, that state you must perceive." That immovable state which is not affected by the birth and death of a body or a mind, that state you must perceive. It seems to me that with this sentence, he's encouraging resoluteness. Listen to his words. That state you must perceive. It's like a life or death matter. You need to learn what you are. This is the most important thing you have to do. Everything else pales by comparison. This you must learn, you must realize, you must see, you must perceive, you must know. Don't forget the must. The must that's in the heart, not the must that's in the mind, not the must that says, if you don't do this, you're bad, because that must is useless. But the must that's in the heart, that driving desire to know the truth, which is really nothing but a beacon calling you home, that must, right? Stay with that must. If you know, I must know truth. If you know, I must know the self, the true self. If you know, I must know. I must know. The more you know that, the more you will resolutely remember to remind yourself that you are not the mind and that its problems are not yours. The more you'll know to lose interest in it. That immovable state, which is not affected by the birth and death of a body. Beyond birth and death. We're not talking about thoughts or ideas here. We're not talking about the belief, oh yeah, I don't believe in death. That's nothing. We're talking about knowledge, direct experience, beyond all doubt, beyond all questioning, absolute certainty. That immovable state which is not affected by the birth and death of a body or a mind, that state you must perceive. Must with the heart. Nothing else is of value. Nothing else is worth time. Nothing else is worth attention. So let's see what I wrote in the journal after contemplating that quote. I wrote, I agree to be led by love in an experience of joy to the full and complete realization of self. I agree to be led by love in an experience of joy to the full and complete realization of self. This is not the first time I've written those words. The first time I wrote those words was in probably April, maybe early May of 2004. I had just started reading A Course in Miracles. I was only on page 15. And something on that page inspired me to write this vow to myself. I agree to be led by love in an experience of joy to the full and complete realization of self. What does it mean, an experience of joy? Well, it doesn't mean there wasn't any resistance, because there was. But it means remembering above anything else what I truly want. Above all else I want to see. So that even this experience that is happening now, that is bringing up so much fear and so much resistance, I am grateful for. I am happy it is here, because above all else I want to see. And so even this I want to be pushed up, seen and released. I agree to be led by love and an experience of joy to the full and complete realization of self, which means I will not stop with anything less. I understand that I must perceive that self. I must know. I agree to be led by love in an experience of joy to the full and complete realization of self.